listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Welcome to your latest European football podcast. I'm Rob Daly. This week, do you like football, admin? If so, great, because we'll be discussing the Champions League and Europa League draws. And we're joined by London Evening Standard journalist Tom Colomossi as Spurs are drawn with Fiorentina.
Fiorentina possibly even tougher nut to crack now than they were last year, and Spurs are probably at a similar level with a young improving squad of players, so cracking time. Probably if you had to push me, I'd pick Fiorentina to go through again.
We also have the latest from every major league as Barcelona and Real Madrid drop points in La Liga. Plus, we hear from former Celtic and Republic of Ireland defender Darren O'Dea about what happened when he went to work with Nicolas Anelka at Mumbai City.
The only problems I kind of saw, if you like, were out with the team that management had a few issues, and I think our assistant manager left halfway through the season and stuff like that. But these were things that players don't control.
All that to come, plus we explain why the champions of Bulgaria are threatening to quit their league.
This is Football in Europe.
Alongside me, as always, Chris Parrott. Chris, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here.
I don't normally do that. I have no idea why I did that.
Yeah,
this
no,
time.
I liked it actually. Formal entrance.
Now, we got lots to get through with the draws.
Yeah.
We were supposed to do MLS chat this week. Now, you said that you'd spoken to Phil Blacker, Sky Sports commentator on the MLS, about talking to us on the show.
Yeah.
I saw him. He denied it.
I think I know why.
What?
Because we went to a pub where we had 3 pints and weren't aware that it was 8%. And I was struggling.
Oh, so you think you asked him during...
Well, no, I definitely asked him during that. And I wonder if he forgot about it.
Yeah, it was loopy juice, that stuff.
Oh, it was unbelievable. It came out of a wall. Never have a beer that comes straight out of a wall. Just conventional tap next time.
Yeah, it's a bad sign. Thanks to everyone for their tweets this week. We're going to get to all of them because people have been tweeting us about the Champions League and Europa League draw. I like this one as well from Ian Todd on Twitter. He says, I only recently found the podcast, keeping me looking like I know about all the hipster new players in Europe. Thanks a lot, Ian. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes if you're so inclined. So, Chris, a big explosion of European football draws this weekend, but we're going to tie it all in. It's going to be a slightly different format, and we will tie it into how the domestic leagues are going. So, Champions League draw, Chris. Let's start with Arsenal getting drawn with Barcelona, who drew 2-2 with Deportivo at the weekend, dropped a two-goal lead at home, I think that was as well, wasn't it, from Barcelona?
Yeah, that might just be the only consolation for Arsenal fans this week, having been knocked out so often in the round of 16 to Bayern in recent years. They couldn't get Bayern because they're in their same group, and they get Barcelona.
It doesn't get worse, does it? I mean, that's the worst case scenario they could have had.
Well, I think those two are, at the moment, by far and away above everybody else in Europe. Small comfort. They were two up against Deportivo at home. Messi and Rakitic. Messi is back from that injury. As if he's never been away. Long time out, but he just looks to have hit the ground running. Iniesta, interestingly, called it inexplicable. I'd like to know how often under Luis Enrique, probably never, had they been 2-0 up, particularly at home, and not won the game. So that, for Arsenal fans, is something to take. But as you mentioned, they're the defending champions. And if anyone's going to win this Champions League twice in a row, you'd think Barca have got as good a...
Well, I think Arsenal, it's the same problem for Arsenal as always, that the round of 16 will be their undoing until they make a big statement and beat one of these teams.
Yeah.
Because Barca, obviously, as we know, into the new year, will have Arda Turan and Alex Vidal available, and we don't know who else they might sign in January. Luis Enrique said he may sign players.
Well, if they play like they are currently, don't give Arsenal much of a prayer, to be honest. You have to hope they have an off day. Arsenal have got very, very good players. And they might win the Premier League this season, although it's not the best Premier League we've had for a while. They're going to need a massive slice of luck, is in all honesty. They're going to need to be at their absolute peak, and Barcelona are going to have an off night or two. If you ask me who I think is going to go through, well, I don't think you can see past Barcelona.
No, absolutely not. Elsewhere, a new team in Ghent for the round of 16 will take on Wolfsburg. That's their reward for reaching the round of 16. And I was speaking to the football journalist Mark Rodden at the weekend. He says, since Belgium introduced a playoff system, as in the top six teams, I think, fight it out at the back end of the season. Belgium's gone from 14th to 9th in the UEFA coefficient. So Belgian football doing really well out of that at the moment. Real Madrid lost to Villarreal at the weekend. Bobby Soldier, Roberto Soldado with the winner against Real Madrid. And further disappointment for Rafa Benitez. His side go to Roma in the Champions League. Real Madrid had their appeal with the Copa del Rey thing where they were kicked out, declined. So they will be kicked out of that tournament. Chelsea, Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, that's the worst draw that Chelsea could have got.
They couldn't get Arsenal, of course. You know, actually, Barcelona are probably thinking Arsenal's a difficult tie as well. You know,
that is true.
I think they'd rather have had PSV or Ghent or, you know, one of the others. But yeah, and third season in a row. Ridiculous that they've met in the knockout stages. Don't know if you remember the quarterfinals a couple of years ago. Chelsea went through an away goals. Demba Ba, I think, scored in the last minute at Stamford Bridge. Then last season, remember Thiago Silva scoring a header right at the end of extra time. I think it's 2-3-3 draws between them. It's one all in terms of going through and away goals. Since last season, have Chelsea got worse? Yes. Have Paris Saint-Germain got better? Probably.
And I think Paris Saint-Germain reminded everyone in France how good they are with that 5-1 win over Lyon at the weekend. Although Kevin Trapp made a big mistake to allow Lyon to score a goal.
Yeah, he did. And of course, he came in for Salvatore Sirigu, who I didn't think did much wrong in the last couple of seasons. Yeah, Laurent Blanc, according to L'Equipe as well, they think he's going to be offered a 2-year contract extension.
Blanc is?
Yeah, Blanc is. Okay. Which, given the standing of the club and the constant pressure he is under, shows what a good job I think he's doing. No team's gone through a league season unbeaten in Ligue 1, but they're, are they 17 points clear?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not yet Christmas. I mean, that is...
It's an indictment on the league at the same time.
Yeah, it is. But it's going to be... It'll be very interesting. And as I mentioned, I think Chelsea have got the hardest tie they could. They know them very well. And we get to see Zlatan Ibrahimovic in England again.
PSV take on Atletico. Benfica, Zenit, a couple of little nice subplots for that one, Chris.
Yeah, a lot. I mean, you've got Axel Witsel and Ezequiel Garay going back to Benfica.
Yeah, and Javi Garcia as well.
Garcia. You've got Andre Villas-Boas, Portuguese, heavily linked with some jobs in Portugal, let's be honest. Did you see after Porto got knocked out, Julen Lopetegui, when they landed back at Porto Airport? It was got quite nasty.
Oh, what happened?
There were angry fans waiting there, police escort. Oh, wow. He took it really well, actually. Just sort of walked onto the bus, but not happy at all. I think we had Andy Brassel on earlier on, actually, maybe before El Clasico, who said that Lopetegui has still not won them over because they don't win the big
Absolutely,
games.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's what happened at Stamford Bridge.
Elsewhere in the draw as well, Manchester City, Dynamo Kiev. So finally, City get a draw that they will be looking at and thinking we should get through to the quarterfinal, Chris.
Yeah, definitely. And just reward. You win your group and that's what you should get. And, you know, they did it ever so well, I thought, against Mönchengladbach. And I tell you what, if ever there's been a one-goal swing either way, because it had Dybala's shot which hit the bar for Juventus last week gone in, City wouldn't have won the group. Sevilla wouldn't be in the Europa League, Mönchengladbach would be.
Right.
Poor old Juventus have Bayern and Manchester City get Dynamo Kiev. As you mentioned, they're a good team, but if Manchester City, with the players they have, don't go through that, I'm not sure they'll ever reach the last eight.
Yes, yeah, so City have Dynamo Kiev, Andriy Yarmolenko, their key player, and it's whether they can keep hold of him as well with the January transfer window coming. I'd be surprised if they did sell him.
Yeah, so would I. I mean, we saw with Dynamo Kiev, they were excellent in the two games against Chelsea. They won't be any pushovers.
And they killed Everton last year.
They did,
I mean, destroyed them at home.
But this is Manchester City's chance. And, spoke with Mourinho earlier on this season, and he said, as soon as we reached the last eight, this is when he was at Porto, he said, when we reached the quarterfinals, we started thinking, yeah, we can win it.
Right.
And I think any team that gets there, particularly Manchester City, with their players, if they reach the quarterfinals, can they go and win it? I really don't see why not. They have, you know, if Aguero and De Bruyne and Sterling and Silva fire, and Yaya Toure has a good game, they have Joe Hart in goal, and Vincent Kompany's fit.
I mean, that's so key for them.
There's no reason.
So we've been getting your tweets in about the Champions League draw. We'll get to you ones about the Europa League later on. Ollie Hanley is really looking forward to Barcelona against Arsenal. He says it will be a classic technical battle. And on current form, he reckons Olivier Giroud could cause Barcelona some problems. Kurt Hurd, who's been a favourite of the podcast, he's been travelling around Europe going to football matches. And he went to Atletico recently. Well, he says that PSV against Atletico is the tie he's most looking forward to because there's a lot of talent, both having great seasons. He thinks it's the hardest game to call of the draw, and there will be a special atmosphere at both legs. I think that's a pretty good call. Speaking of Atletico, Chris, we did mention that they've gone joint top in Spain.
No, sorry, Diego, but yeah. another good win against Athletic Bilbao. Antoine Griezmann scored another brilliant goal. He is absolutely bang in form at the moment. And because Barcelona dropped points and Real Madrid lost, so actually Barca and Atletico are joint top with 35 points. Five clear now of Real Madrid, and given how few points they drop, that's a significant lead.
So we've also mentioned that Juventus will play Bayern in the next round of the Champions League. Bayern 2-0 winners over Ingolstadt at the weekend. Robert Lewandowski scoring in that game, no surprise. So they keep their advantage at the top of the Bundesliga. But they face a Juve side who've won six in a row and appear to be back in the title race, which brings us nicely to our Serie A roundup.
This is Football in Europe, Serie A roundup.
Joining us now on the podcast is Tom Colomossi from the London Evening Standard and Serie A expert as well. Tom, thanks for coming on the show.
No, it's a pleasure, Rob.
We've got lots to get through this week because it was a big weekend in Italy. And I suppose the notable game, there were two notable games, but Juve getting that win against Fiorentina. What did you think of that performance and that result for Juve?
Well, Paulo Dybala again showing his class. I think I was a bit doubtful when they signed him from Palermo at the end of last season, because I thought he phoned it in a bit in the last third of that season. And when you compared what he was doing with what Carlos Tevez was doing, I did wonder whether he'd be up to replacing him, but he really does look the real deal and more. For someone of that age to slot relatively quickly into his first big club and become so influential is a credit to him, and I think he's going to be an important performer for club and country for years to come. When you look at the performance, it's interesting actually, because I know that Juventus had such a terrible start, and I remember having a chat to a football agent who knows the Italian market very well after four or five games, and he said, oh, Juventus will still be champions. And I said, really? No chance? You know, they looked to be in such disarray, but now you could actually see it, couldn't you? They've got that solidity back with a 3-5-2, those three Italian centre-backs. Pogba looks a bit more like his old self. Marquinhos playing well, and Dybala and Mandzukic, they have a perfect pairing, so you can really see them being the main challengers perhaps to Inter over the remainder of the season now.
It's amazing after that 3-1 win that they're only 6 points off top now. I mean, and two behind the likes of Napoli and Fiorentina. But Cuadrado scored a header that he admitted was rather fortunate against his old club, a looping header to the back post that made it 1-1 on 6 minutes. I mean, do you, from someone who covers football in London, have Chelsea made a big mistake in letting him go out to Serie A this season?
I've always really liked Cuadrado ever since he burst through at Fiorentina. It's a bit strange. I think you can take the case of Mohamed Salah in the same bracket as well.
Yeah.
Very good players who went to Chelsea, but you're always going to need a little bit of time to adapt. I think especially for Cuadrado, because he went there mid-season. And for them just to say, no, sorry, Paul, you're not good enough for us now, it seems to be an odd decision, because he's proved his quality. He proved his quality at Fiorentina, he proved it at the World Cup for Colombia, where he's an important part of their team. So you'd have thought that they'd given him at least the full calendar year, wouldn't you? Second half of last season, given the full pre-season, try to integrate him into your side properly this year, and then, okay, if he's still not doing it, there's plenty of takers in January in Italy. But he just never really had the opportunity. And while he slowed down a little bit for Juventus, perhaps with the change of system to the 3-5-2, he's still a vital cog in their machine. And you look at Mohamed Salah as well, so good for Fiorentina last year, and he's really maintained that form with Roma. I know he's had an injury recently that's halted him a little bit, but the thing with Salah, Rob, is, well, he's such a goal threat, isn't he? And that's why, even if he doesn't do that much for a certain part of the game, he can always score you a goal, fine finisher with that left foot. And that's why I was surprised that he never really had enough of a chance at Chelsea, because, you know, with the sort of football Mourinho likes, a conservative setup and then counter-attacking, you thought he'd have been perfect. And sometimes I think, well, who am I to criticise Jose Mourinho with everything he's won? But sometimes the art of being an excellent coach is to get the best out of guys who maybe aren't immediately, automatically programmed into your way of working. And I think those two men are two that Mourinho discarded a bit quickly, perhaps.
The other probably star-studded game of the weekend, it was Napoli nil, Roma nil. A bit disappointing in terms of a fixture between two teams who've been exciting to watch. Roma probably at fault at times this season. Wojciech Szczesny made a number of good saves, but have you had any thoughts about this game and the fact it was a stalemate in Naples?
Yeah, I saw a tweet from Paolo Bandini, who is an expert on Italian football, and he said that all the results that he could have imagined for this game, 0-0 would probably have been the last one. And I can see exactly where he's coming from, because Napoli have got a fantastic attacking side. The talent there is just remarkable, and Roma's defence has just been atrocious for a lot of the season, and the reason they've been able to stay up there is precisely because of their pace and potency in attack. So you'd have expected a Napoli win, maybe a kind of 3 or 4-2 I would have gone for. So to see 0-0 was remarkable, and Szczesny did keep Roma in the game with a couple of his saves. I just I do wonder about Roma. I think this was a real opportunity for them this year, and I think they're going to waste it because the transfer policy sometimes of Walter Sabatini, he's made some decent signings in his time, but I think too often he just looks at the market and says, OK, well, let's have a go on him, let's have a go on him and see if any of them work out. And it seems that rather too many of them haven't. I didn't see much of Tony Rudiger in the Bundesliga, but he doesn't look capable of being a first-choice central defender in Roma's team when it's a team trying to win Serie A. Why they're playing Alessandro Florenzi as a right-back? He's a good player, Florenzi. I really like him. He's not a full-back. And he's been forced to play there because Mike Owen's too old and he's going to get too many injuries. And again, Torresidis isn't really up to the job. So I felt a bit sorry for Kostas Manolas, who I think is a good defender, but he's been keeping their defence afloat, really. Going on to Napoli, it's completely neutral, but I do hope that they win the league just because I think they're great to watch. And Maurizio Sarri is a fantastic story, isn't he? The number of clubs he coached at so many low levels before he even made it to Serie A with Empoli and then earning his chance here and doing very well, I think it's great to see. And it rather shows up a bit, the work of Rafael Benitez, certainly in the league, because I think they've been much better in the league than they ever were under Benitez. And Benitez has built a reputation rightly as one of the best coaches around. So I hope that this draw and their dodgy result at Bologna last week when they lost 3-2, I hope that's not the start of a bit of a decline for them.
Yeah, Napoli just 4 points off the top at the moment because Inter got a 4-0 win at Udinese. Icardi's scoring again. I mean, it was a bit of an issue at the start of the season, but perhaps you'd look at service in terms of him. But are you impressed with what Roberto Mancini is now getting out of the Nerazzurri?
Look, you wouldn't particularly pay to watch them, would you? You're not going to get much excitement from watching them. But what he's been able to do in the 18 months he's been there has been very impressive. It's quite ironic for a player who was an artist, really, wasn't he? For your listeners who remember him, he was all about the tricks and the flicks and the wonderful goals, and maybe not so much about the defensive contribution. It's interesting that when he goes into a club, certainly happened at Man City and it's happening here, he makes them hard to beat, first of all. Miranda, who was an excellent Atletico Madrid, has been very, very good for Inter in the centre of defence. Felipe Melo, again, I don't like to watch him as a player. I think he's a right clogger, but he's fairly effective presence for them in the middle. And what he's, the number of clean sheets they've had, the number of 1-0 wins they've had, he's worked out that once we get this right, then we can build from there. It's a bit like the old George Graham side to Arsenal, having enough talented players to make the difference at the other end. They've had one or two lucky results. I think they were fortunate to beat Roma earlier in the season. That probably moved them on a bit in terms of the belief it gave them. They were a bit lucky in that game. It's Chesney mistake and Roma missed three or four very good chances. But going back to Mario Icardi, you asked him there, I think the problem with him is he's a good finisher, but maybe he doesn't do enough off the ball to merit inclusion every week in this team. And I think Mancini sussed him out quite well. He's played some weeks, hasn't played other weeks. Lajic has been used as a false nine in recent matches and been fairly effective. But I think if Icardi's going to be as one of the really top players, he does need to add a little bit more to his game, because his finishing and goal-scoring threat alone probably isn't quite good enough to justify not doing anything else, not contributing enough to general play.
Yeah, and they're 4 points clear heading into the winter and the Christmas period. Tom, I'll just ask you about Milan in a moment. I just want to mention this story very quickly about Amadou Diawara, who was sent off for the weekend in Bologna's 1-0 win at Genoa. He was shown a late red card and he mimicked guerrilla gestures after he felt he'd been suffering offensive taunts from some of the home supporters during the game. So he was very disappointed about the scenario. So we'll keep you updated on the podcast as to what happens with that scenario. But it's not the first time that something like this has happened in Italy. Tom, final one. Nisa Mihailovic, Milan. I mean, a disappointing result for them at the weekend, because they were drawn 1-1 by Hellas Verona, with Luca Toni getting the equaliser. Hellas Verona, you know, struggling at the bottom of the table. Do you see the manager of AC Milan under pressure now?
Well, yes, but you have to look a little bit deeper, because when one coach comes in, doesn't do so well, the next guy comes in, doesn't do so well, the next guy suffers the same fate. You have to look beyond the coach, and I think the Milan fans have done that. And the man who's very much in their sights is Adriano Galliani, the I don't know the exact translation of it. I think it's managing director will be his title in English. His, again, transfer policy of the club, we were mentioning Walter Sabatini before, and Milan's has been very, very strange. I realise that they're not the Milan they once were, that there's not quite as much money there available. They've just been picking up free transfers here and there, often of aging players, and it just hasn't quite worked. I think this year they've switched back to the idea that they're going to try and decide a lot more Italian, which I think is a good thing. I don't think there's enough of that in Serie A. But it's still a club in a fair mess. And I don't think Mihailovic can be blamed too much for it, because you look at Allegri in his final season, he got the push, and he had Clarence Seedorf came in, he only lasted till the summer. Filippo Inzaghi was given most of last season, and then Mihailovic came in. None of them has been really able to turn it around. So the problem runs much deeper, right to the heart of the club, and I think it's going to be a good few years before we see Milan back at the top of Europe again, which is a sad state of affairs when you consider that only Real Madrid have won more European Cups than their seven.
Tom, just as we're talking, we made a joke off-air before we recorded that we were wondering whether we would finish before the Europa League draw started around midday. I can tell you now, mate, I can tell you Tottenham have got Fiorentina. So that's again, sort of a clash of your two worlds there. Yeah, so what's your... You obviously cover Tottenham for the Evening Standard. The two sides have met in the competition before. I mean, what's your thoughts on that as a last 32 draw for Tottenham?
Well, another cracking tie, isn't it? It was a good tie last season. I think Spurs live to regret the fact that they didn't make more of their domination early in the game at White Hart Lane. Could have been 3 or 4 up after about half an hour, but they allowed Fiorentina back into it and ended up drawing 1-1 in London, and then Fiorentina won 2-0 over in Florence. Fiorentina possibly even tougher nut to crack now than they were last year, and Spurs are probably at a similar level with a young improving squad of players. So cracking tie, probably if you had to push me, I'd pick Fiorentina to go through again.
Tom, really love having you on the podcast. Will you come on again?
Absolute pleasure. Yeah, anytime.
I like to ask people that while we're recording, so it gives them into it. Tom, thanks for coming on.
No worries. Thanks, Rob.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
OK, Chris, let's talk about the Europa League now. More football admin. More football admin. Valencia will play Rapid Vienna in the next round of the competition. Gary Neville could potentially face Manchester United, but I'm keen to avoid that narrative until it eventually does happen. How did Valencia get on at the weekend, Chris? Because this was, after being knocked out the Champions League, this was Neville's first proper league game in charge. So what did they do?
They drew, but I'm not sure how they did, in all honesty.
They should have won?
No, they should have lost. Oh. Late own goal gifted them a point. But actually, you have to give Neville a bit of credit, because he picked Jaume Domenech for the Lyon game. Changed his goalkeeper. One of his first big calls, I guess. He had a really good game against Lyon, and he had an even better game against Eibar. He saved a penalty. He made an outrageous save at 0-0. But yeah, a very late own goal really did gift Neville a point. Eibar, this tiny little club, remember, I think their ground holds 6,000 or 7,000, something like that. So he's up and running. He hasn't got his first win, but at least he didn't lose again.
So what they deserve to lose, what else happened in the game for them to deserve to lose?
Pretty much, I mean, the own goal was a bad own goal right at the end, which ultimately gave them a point. As I mentioned, they missed a penalty at 1-0, or Domenech saved it. They got a man sent off. It was just one of those as I said, you give Neville credit because he picked Domenech, and otherwise it might have been 3 or 4-0 before they got the own goal to equalise.
Yeah, I just wonder if Gary Neville's realised what he's got himself into at Valencia. So they take on Rapid Vienna, and there's some great ties. Borussia Dortmund take on Porto. That could be Champions League tie.
Yeah,
almost, couldn't it?
I actually think there's a lot that could be Champions League as well.
Go on, what else are you thinking?
If you look down, Villarreal, Napoli.
Yeah.
Tottenham, Fiorentina. I mean, that's a push, but it's better than Ghent, Wolfsburg, probably.
Yeah, Marseille, Bilbao, the Bielsa derby, I think we'll call that one as well. Chris, as well, Manchester United obviously transfer to the Europa League, having dropped out of the Champions League. A very disappointing few days for United and Louis van Gaal after the defeat to Bournemouth at the weekend. I saw that, and they're so depleted by injuries and not playing well. But they take on Midtjylland in the Europa League in the next round. The Danish side, who are third domestically, really they should get through. I haven't seen much of Midtjylland, I'll admit, but
they beat Southampton, remember, in qualifying.
They did.
They're an interesting team as well, because they're one of these that are really heavy on data. A bit like the, not quite the Moneyball thing, you know, the baseball, when they picked players purely on stats, but they're much more stat heavy than other teams, which has helped them. Certainly they don't have the biggest budget in Denmark. It's helped them win the title and it's helped them get through to the round of 32. So they are an interesting club. But yeah, Manchester United, a bit of a step into the unknown, but they should absolutely get past that team, one would imagine.
By the way, Dortmund did beat Eintracht Frankfurt 4-1 at the weekend, Aubameyang scoring once again. He missed a penalty in that game as well, and it keeps Dortmund within 5 points of Bayern, just to keep you across the Europa, the Bundesliga as well. Chris, speaking of Bundesliga teams, Augsburg play Liverpool. Now, I saw Augsburg recently, but you saw them at the weekend. You commentated on them beating Schalke by 2-1. It seems like, having been so good last season and so bad this season, that they've probably turned the corner.
Yeah, very much so. I think it's 10 points in their last four Bundesliga games. They're well out of the relegation zone now, not on points, but I think they leapfrogged three or four teams yesterday with their win over Schalke. So if you look at the Bundesliga table as a Liverpool fan and you think, oh, they're lowly, it's because they had an awful start to the season. But they shocked everyone last year. They finished fifth, didn't they? I think they beat Bayern. And they deserve to beat Schalke, actually, at the weekend, who are a good team with big players. And I don't think Augsburg will be a pushover. Jurgen Klopp will know them very well, but this is a team that 10 years ago were playing in the third tier, so it's been one of those sort of fairy tale rises up the leagues. And from their point of view, the pinnacle might just be Liverpool in Europe. It will be the match of their lives, if you like. I know they're playing in the Bundesliga, but you know what I mean? Like a huge European name coming. Jurgen Klopp coming back to Germany. They'll be absolutely up for it.
And in Marcus Weinzierl, they have a coach that everyone rates very highly indeed. But who's their key player? Is it a man who scored against Liverpool before for Young Boys, Raul Bobadilla?
Yeah, probably. He's the fulcrum of their attack, isn't he? And on his day, looks brilliant. I called him a poor man's Berbatov, and you likened him to Diego Costa.
Well, he has this Diego Costa thing where he will wind up centre-backs. He got Dante sent off a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he wound up Cologne a few weeks ago when I saw them play. And
he's not always there. He has off days.
But I suppose that's the difference between a good player and a really good player is consistency, isn't it?
But he's very dangerous, and Liverpool at the back are not the best at the moment. So it'll be interesting. I think it's a difficult tie for Liverpool, but will they be favourites? Yeah, they're favourites to go through.
And if Liverpool get a penalty, they'll have to keep an eye on goalkeeper Marvin Hitz. We talked about it last week, and you've probably seen this on Twitter if you're into European football. Marvin Hitz is the Augsburg goalkeeper who kicked up part of the penalty spot in the Cologne game, causing Anthony Modeste to slip and miss a penalty. Hitz saved it. Well, Hitz then got sent a bill from Cologne. Did you see this?
Yeah.
To repair the pitch, a bill equivalent to £89 for, I think it was a new piece of grass to go over the pitch and the man time to fix the pitch. And Hitz paid that, and I think that money has gone to a charity.
Yeah,
as well. That's quite a nice story, isn't it?
It's a really nice story. But the German FA didn't ban him either. So,
do you think it's worth it, like the sporting misconduct type thing? Do you think it's worth a ban?
It's a tricky one. I think you set a dangerous precedent because a goalkeeper can only do that, but you know, people are diving all over the shop.
All right, there's misconduct in different ways happening.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. I don't know who the commentator was, but he managed to spot that as I was listening to it. Very well indeed.
No need to mention my name. Chris, we mentioned Manchester United before, and I'm sure many United fans are rueing the fact that Javier Hernandez for Bayer Leverkusen is just doing so well. They play Sporting. Leverkusen beat Gladbach 5-0 at the weekend, a disappointing week for Gladbach after they lost to Man City, knocked out of Europe. And they beat Bayern last weekend. A 5-0 loss at Leverkusen for Andre Schubert, his first Bundesliga defeat. But everyone is talking about Javier Hernandez and his goal rate. So give us some numbers.
15 goals in his last 12 games.
Not bad.
Not bad. And of course, the comparison, 10 goals for Manchester United in their last 12 games.
Right.
Now, I think we disagree on something here because...
What's the problem? I don't like disagreeing, Chris. I like getting along. What's wrong?
I know.
What's wrong?
So, would Javier Hernandez be playing for Manchester United now?
Yes.
Yeah, but is he good enough for Manchester United?
Yes.
I don't think he is. And
what are you
I think that's
about?
The reason. So when 4 years ago, for example, I know he started the Champions League final, and I know 4 years is a long time ago, but if Manchester United want to get back to that very top level, is Javier Hernandez good enough? I would argue
no. Is he good enough to get them back to that level? Yes. Is he good enough for top level?
Maybe not.
I mean, because he's not getting Bayern's team, well, or Real Madrid's team, as we saw last year.
Well, yeah, exactly. So that's my argument. I'm saying that's why Van Gaal let him go, because he wants United to be at that very top
level.
But
why take a shortcut? Why try and why sell him? And then
I just think it's very easy now looking at it and seeing that United are having trouble scoring, and then Hernandez is scoring a lot of goals. It's very easy to say, oh, why did we get rid of him? I can absolutely understand that, but I think that's the reason Van Gaal let him go, because he thought, I want to take this club back to the very top, and here's Hernandez good enough for the very top. I'm not sure he is.
Okay, well, let's read out some of your tweets on the UEFA Europa League draw. Brendy Boyle says, Premier League teams apart, there are some brilliant games. Napoli, Villarreal, Schalke, Shakhtar, Porto, Dortmund, Leverkusen, Lisbon picked out by him. Jonathan Stephen, having seen Fiorentina this season, we, as in Spurs, are going out again. And Stuart Overton says, from the Europa League draw, it's excellent. Villarreal against Napoli, Dortmund, Porto. And he also says Marseille, Bilbao looks like a great matchup as well. Okay, so that's all the Europa League games, I think, covered. Chris, was there anything else you want to talk about the coefficient?
Yeah.
You have some numbers you want to go through, because...
Love the coefficient.
You love numbers. So Fiorentina, Tottenham, we heard about it from Tom Colomossi earlier, but this game sort of encapsulates the situation where Italy and England are battling it out to have four Champions League spots. So try and do this without being boring, if you can possibly do
that. Can I first of all say I'm dreadful at numbers? However... I don't think it's been reported that accurately, actually, in lots of media outlets, the coefficient. So the coefficient is always live. So when someone does a story about it and they break the news, actually, they're always there. You can go to the UEFA website and you can see them live after each match week.
So in theory, at the moment, England has had better performing teams than Italy. That's basically what the coefficient is saying.
So basically, the coefficient said, broadly, if they had a similar season to last year when Juventus reached the final and English clubs didn't do well, if that happened again this year... As of next year, England, the Premier League, would be fighting for only three Champions League places. But I think in the last week, it's been brilliant for English clubs. So Juventus didn't win their group, Manchester City did. City now get Dynamo Kiev. Juventus get Bayern. Roma away at Real Madrid. Now, if those two go out, forget about Chelsea and Arsenal, but if City go through that tie, then England will have one more team than Italy in the Champions League. And that means, given that Italian teams have to do better than English clubs this year... One would imagine the Premier League will keep that fourth spot.
So you think that's
season.
What happened? England will keep their four Champions League spots?
I think they will. And I think we might be looking at Manchester City and saying thank you very much.
If you'd like to know more about that, tweet Chris at Chris D. Parrott on Twitter. So let's hear our special interview this week. It is with the former Republic of Ireland and Celtic defender Darren O'Dea. We've had him on the show before and we heard great tales from his time in Ukraine. In Donetsk and in the MLS as well. But he's just come back from a spell in India with Mumbai City and working with Nicholas Anelka. And he's now looking for the next step in his career as well. So I started by asking, what was it like to play his football in India for a few months?
You're listening to Football in Europe.
It was actually a lot better than what I probably expected going over. The way you were treated and looked after, the setup. Not just in the club, but in the league, was fantastic. It's a real show. Every game's televised, and there's big crowds. And it's it was really exciting to be a part of, and I was delighted to spend the season there. And who knows, I might even revisit this again in the future.
Is that something that you're potentially looking at?
Potentially, yeah. The season I spent was for them to get to know me a little bit better, but obviously for me to get to know the league and the place and to see what it would have fit, and it certainly did. I left with a really good relationship with the club, so you never know. Football, as I've probably said in the past, I wouldn't have predicted where I've played in my career to date, so certainly don't want to predict the future, but absolutely the door would still be open for a return back.
When you see cricket in India, you see those fanatical fans. Did you see that transfer to a sport that they do clearly love in football as well?
Yeah, fanatical about football. My debut with the club would have been a place called Kochi against Kerala, and that was in front of 61,000. The enthusiasm for it, you can't help but be sucked in by it. The allegiance to each club is different. So we were away from home in front of 61,000, but it was one of the nicest crowds you'll get. They're there to watch good football and to see goals. They're obviously there to support their own team, but it's not quite as intense as it would be in Britain. But the people really took to it, and it was great to be part of it.
I mean, there were so many great names over there, and you were managed by Nicholas Anelka. What was that like to work with him?
Yeah, it was great. Obviously, he's a guy that you don't need to speak about his career too much. He's played in nearly every top club in Europe. He's had an incredible career. It was great to obviously play with him first and foremost, and then he was kind of player coach, so it's good to learn from him. He's a good guy, a nice guy, quiet, kind of nearly as you'd expect him to be, but very professional in what he did, and enjoyed everything about Mumbai, to be honest with you.
There were some quotes that filtered out to England where he said, I think it was after a recent game, I think he was totally frustrated and said he didn't feel he had the fighters in the team that he needed or that they had last season. Was that something that got back to the squad, or did the squad have any thoughts on Anelka saying that?
Listen, I could probably go into it, and I think out of respect for kind of Mumbai, I won't. There was a lot of problems out with the team and out with the control of the players. So that was to do with Nico and the staff he had. And they were comments, yeah, that he made that probably no one was too happy with. But you probably look down his career, there's not many interviews he's done. He's a quiet guy by nature and probably doesn't do too many interviews. And I think he was probably just frustrated after the game. His etiquette, if you like, in the interview probably didn't do him too well. But there were things that were very much without the team. The only problems I kind of saw, if you like, were out with the team. That management had a few issues, and I think our assistant manager left halfway through the season and stuff like that. But these were things that players don't control. Our job was to train and perform on a pitch, and that's what we tried to do.
I remember when we talked about the MLS, you talked about the climate being an issue. So I have to ask about what was it like to play, not just matches, but to train in India?
Funnily enough, it was a relief going to India because we did pre-season in Dubai. And that was the kind of thinking behind this for the more foreign players. And I'm actually not even joking, saying, especially for someone like me, I was probably one that struggled the most. We went to Dubai and pre-season was just insane for myself.
You're Irish, Darren,
the first 3 days now, I went there in very good condition. I'd looked after myself and as you do when you go into a new club, you're looking to make an impression, even if that's in your running, that you want to show that you're fit and ready. Well, when I say I was, it was embarrassing for myself because I literally couldn't function doing the warm-up. I was gasping for breath. It was a real struggle in Dubai, as much as it sounds great, all doing pre-season in Dubai, and it is a fantastic place, but the pre-season was very, very difficult. But it was funny, when we went back to Mumbai, it was still miles more humid than what I'm used to, but it was a relief going back, and I kind of hit the ground running once I went back to Mumbai, so it was, I suppose, a worthwhile experience to go to Dubai then in the end.
Can I ask you as well about what your thoughts on Ireland's draw in Euro that happened at the weekend? So, I mean, it's a really tough group for Ireland with Italy, Belgium and Sweden.
Yeah, it is. It's a very difficult group. Obviously, in 2012, we had a very difficult group in Italy, Spain and Croatia. Two of them ended up in the finalists. The main thing is that they're there. They've qualified. It'll be fantastic. Again, the fantastic experience for the players. And hopefully they can do better than 2012. But it'll be very difficult. I think the first game against Sweden will be a massive game in terms of every tournament you want to start well. But I think in this group that Ireland are in, it's massive in terms of the result, I guess, because you don't want to be coming off the back of a loss and going into Italy and Belgium needing wins. So I think the first game will be pivotal in how the group goes.
And what next for you, Darren? Are you considering a move? I know you've got your family now, and I don't know if you're trying to settle, but whether the MLS would be... I did see you linked with Toronto again, and have you got any plans for what's gonna happen next with your career?
No, I don't. I've ideas in my head. At the end of the day, you're at the mercy of other clubs. The MLS, of course, it's an option, but I would find it difficult to make a deal work out there, I think, with obviously my family. It'd be a big move, if you like. But it's something, I've spoken to a few teams out there, and it's a league I obviously know well and a league I absolutely love. So if a deal kind of could, it would be more, it's more complicated than just striking a deal between me and my club. I obviously have other people to think about. It's obviously been my wife and my daughter. So I do have ambitions, though, to still see other countries and other cultures as well. So, but as I said, I could say that, and then you'll see I'll sign a long-term deal in Britain, and I'll be spend the rest of my days here. So I really don't know.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
And a big thanks to Darren for coming back on the podcast. He's always a great guest, and best of luck to him to whatever new club he does find for the second half of the season. Chris, are you tired of talking about draws yet?
No.
Good, because the Euro 2016 draw happened at the weekend. I'm sure people have seen a lot of this anyway, so we'll just go through this quickly. Group A, France, Romania, Albania, Switzerland. Not a bad draw for the hosts there. Group B, England, Russia, Wales, Slovakia. Group G, Germany, Ukraine, Poland, Northern Ireland. Group D, Spain, Czech Republic, Turkey and Croatia. Oh, that's a tough group, isn't it? Group E, as we heard from Darren, that's a really tough group for the Republic of Ireland with Belgium, Italy and Sweden. And in Group F, Portugal have got a good group. They take on Iceland, Austria and Hungary. England's group, I mean, people have been looking at this all weekend, so we don't want to dwell on it too much. But your thoughts on England's group being drawn with Russia, Wales and Slovakia?
I think it's good for England and Wales, to be honest. I think,
right,
given that some of the best placed third teams go through to the last 16, both get every chance of going through. I think Slovakia are similar to Wales in a way. They have, and I know the strength of the collective was very important for Wales, but they have two very, very good players.
Oh, two outstanding players, yeah.
You know, they have Ramsey and Bale, who would play for England. Slovakia have Skrtel and Hamsik, who would probably play for England as well.
Yeah, yeah, he would.
So, you know, I think they're relatively even teams. Russia have been brilliant under Leonid Slutsky since he took charge. So
awful under Capello.
Awful under Capello. But yeah, I mean, I think from Wales' point of view and England's point of view, it's a group that they'll consider that they'll be able to go through. And I tell you, I imagine Eurostars are totally booked. Lens is a, yeah, Lens is a tiny place. You know, the whole population of Lens can fit into the stadium. What are they going to do when England and Wales turn up?
I don't know. It's going to be absolute carnage.
It's going to be carnage.
By the way, later on in the season, we're going to do little features on every single team. A bit of an ambitious project, that, isn't it, Chris? Because there's 24 now. But we're going to try and do features on every team so that you sound like you know what's going on ahead of the European Championships in the summer. Chris, some of the more stranger stories now. We've got three to finish the podcast. Let's start with Greece. What's going on in Greece?
Well, all sorts. Olympiakos continued their 100% record, but off the pitch anyway. Looks like they're going to strike for an indefinite period beginning next week.
Who's, well, all the players?
All the players. Therefore, the league wouldn't go ahead. The cup games will happen this week, but beyond that, it's uncertain. It's all because the PFA, if you like, over there, believe they signed a deal with the authorities that for when sides get relegated from the professional leagues to the amateur leagues, that there is a fallback, if you like, that those players don't just almost become unemployed overnight.
Right.
They claim that the league has sort of gone back on that, so there's toing and froing. But at the moment, it looks like they are going to strike, which would mean an end to all footballing activities for, oh, as I mentioned, an indefinite future, indefinite period.
There's so many mad things going on at the minute, because Partizan Belgrade, they were knocked out of the Europa League the other day by Augsburg, and their entire board stepped down. The crowd were absolutely furious. Augsburg had to win the game 3-1 to qualify for the next round, and they did. So Partizan were left getting so much abuse from the fans, and the board have stepped down, and there's some great quotes on this about what's next for the club. The club's general director says the managing board resigned collectively last night, and I will head the club in a technical capacity until the club calls an assembly within 30 days to elect new leadership. An utter shambles there, and I think they're 24 points behind Red Star in the league. One of the great derbies of European football, isn't it, Red Star against Partizan Belgrade? And Chris, we have one more story, Ludogorets.
Yeah, well, this is similar in terms of bonkersness, right, yeah. Because remember Ludogorets last season, the goalkeeper scored...
Darlings of the Champions League.
Yeah, darling of the Champions, yeah, League, exactly. And they got through amazingly because an outfield player, I should say, went in goal, was the hero in the penalty shootout. Well, they threatened to walk out of the Bulgarian top flight because at the weekend, the game between Levski Sofia and Litex was called off because the Litex player had walked off the pitch. They believed that the refereeing decisions were unfair in Levski's favour. So they walked off the pitch, and Ludogorets have said they're getting too many favourable decisions, Levski.
Oh, so Ludogorets won't... this isn't a game involving Ludogorets.
No, it was the fact that Litex had these decisions against them, which in their,
wow,
views they were unhappy with. So they've said that the owner has said, we'll probably quit the championship if such precedents in favour of Levski continue.
Wow, okay.
We'll keep an eye on that one.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on all of that absolute nonsense as it goes on. Chris, what do you have on this week? What are you doing, mate?
I am at Old Trafford at the weekend. Very much looking forward
to it. Who are United playing?
Norwich at home.
Okie dokie. And I'm covering some German stuff, so we'll talk about that next week. And we'll talk about the fact that Barcelona are playing in the FIFA Club World Cup.
We're not talking about that, are we?
We're not, no. No, we will. We will a little bit. So tweet us, FIE Podcast, and don't forget to follow us on Audio Boom.
This is Football in Europe.